everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. And my very special guest today is Steve Coppard, who's the Group Director, Debt Policy and Strategy for, is it Arum or Aurum, Steve?
Arum.
Yeah. People do that with me when they talk about Aurum Gold. Is it Arum Gold or Aurum Gold? It's all manner of combination. But Steve, welcome. Thank you so much for giving us your time on Wisdom Chat.
No, it's great to catch up with you, Phil, and really pleased to do it. I should say Arum and Aurum Gold, no relation.
Definitely, yeah. Steve, really, before we sort of get into the meat of what we want to talk about, you know, you've had quite an illustrious career with regards to your work within government, but also within the sort of debt industry. You know, you've been involved for quite a number of years, and what's your passion? What's the driver behind that career?
Thanks, Phil. So I fell into debt, not literally. I mean into the industry, and started off as a collector on the phones. And I just found I was actually quite good at it. And I sort of moved around through customs and excise, and then HMRC when it got set up. And I don't know, we're probably talking about 12, 13 years ago now. I had a relationship breakdown myself, and got into an awful lot of debt. It was around the same time as payday loans were on the market. I had loads of them. And it took me a good year to get my head straight enough to start clawing my way out of that. And then once I did start clawing my way out, you know, I had a lot of mental health problems at the time as well with depression, but it was depression related to the debt that I had.
Yeah.
And when I started getting out of that, I found that I was ready to start taking on more senior roles at work and take on more responsibility. And I started gravitating towards the Cabinet Office because it was the place where you could really make a difference. In government, you get to play with some really big levers and you know, have an impact on the lives of millions of people. I remember talking to somebody from DWP who was interested in coming and working for us, and he said, well, what's the difference between what we do and what you do? I said, well, if you're lucky over the course of your career, you might improve the lives of thousands of people. I said, we can do millions of people in a single policy.
Yeah.
And it was that ability to really impact. But then I think as well, looking at debt as more holistic than just a bit of debt that we owned in government, and understanding that we're all collecting from the same people.
Yeah.
And therefore we needed to take a really joined up collaborative approach across all sectors in the industry. And I think we're a lot better at it these days. Organizations such as the Collaboration Network and MALG obviously facilitate some of that. But I still think there's stuff we can do. And for that reason, I want to keep going to help people who are in my position, but also help the people who deserve to get paid as well, because we've got an obligation to lift people out of the burden of debt.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, Steve. You know, it's been sort of interesting since the last time we spoke and how things have changed for us and developed. But just understanding a little bit about where this sort of passion and this drive comes from in terms of the work that you do. Now, with Arum, you really are about helping organisations improve their practices, and you mentioned collections, and we were talking earlier, obviously, about why people wait so long to ask for help, and what are some of the barriers in their thinking that comes about. You told me the story of the lady who had suffered a difficult experience. Do you want to just elaborate on that a little bit more about this change in the industry as well?
Yeah, sure. So I had a lady who works with my wife who was a victim of economic abuse. And when you're dealing with something that's that psychologically damaging, impactful in your personal life, the last thing you're thinking about is your finances. But of course, once you managed to escape the perpetrator, the only thing that was left was the finances, and they continued to have control over her. And this came about, you know, because her productivity at work was suffering as a result of this. And that's, you know, yes, it's a massive cost to the economy, but it wouldn't have been known about the situation she was in had the productivity not triggered the conversation. And so, I mean, I spoke to my wife and was able to put this lady in touch with some organisations. You know, it was Step Change I referred her to, and yeah, and managed to get her out of that situation. And I think, you know, as an industry, we've got a lot better at understanding that. You know, we've got now the debt and mental health evidence form.
Yeah.
We've now also got the economic abuse evidence form coming through. Yeah. There's obviously the Domestic Abuse Act. So we are getting better at understanding this niche elements that affects debt. But I think it's really about understanding that debt, finance, money runs through every aspect of our lives. And therefore, yeah, we should expect in our industry for every aspect of people's lives to impact on us.
Yeah. And I think, as you were alluding to earlier about changes in collections, you know, one time I can remember through my own experience, like yourself, Steve, having experienced indebtedness and talking to different organisations and the differences in the way that they treated me. You know, I remember one of them, it was an advert years and years ago from BT who talked about, if you're struggling with your telephone bill, talk to us, you know, we'll help you out. And I took sort of encouragement from that to actually engage with them and say, look, I am actually struggling. And their response was, right, well, we'll cut your phone off and we want you to pay your bill in full. I was gobsmacked.
Yeah, and look, I don't think we as an industry do ourselves too many favours in that respect, Phil. You know, if you think about it, you know, the tobacco industry didn't spend billions of dollars on advertising because it doesn't work. Yeah. It did it because it did work.
Yeah.
And we as an industry should pay heed to that and actually shout about some of the good stuff we do, because when we don't shout about it, we leave a vacuum that's filled by naysayers. And so you get the media headlines, aggressive debt collectors did this and that. And all that serves to do. So when somebody goes on and searches for you know, any name of any DCA or enforcement company, it comes back with forums full of, you know, bad experiences because people are just generally anti-collection. Yet actually, what we do is lift people out of the burden of debt. You know, debt-related mental health and mental health-related debt are very well understood these days.
Yeah.
And by lifting people out of the burden of the debt, by helping them to address it, you can improve many aspects of their lives. But also, where you've got people who are maybe a little bit more at the belligerent end of the scale and not paying for lifestyle reasons or other choices, if you don't tackle that, you run the risk of allowing them to slip further and further into problem debt. It's actually compassionate to set the boundaries now and try and encourage them to get out of that position.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose, you know, when, like you said, when people have heard the stories or, you know, have had their own personal, quite challenging circumstances, and we're living in a society that has a certain perception, but we don't necessarily, I suppose, advertise the good that's been done. People are left still with those perceptions. And so there's an onus on us, really, to lift the lid on the good work that's been done. I know full well that over the years, there's so many changes taken place. And I always say to my clients, you know, it's vitally important. If you are struggling in some way, shape or form, don't wait. Because the sooner you engage, the better. There's probably a lot more options and a lot more things that can be done to help and assist. And also at the same time, you know, the way that you will be treated is very different today as before. But there was a little caveat there, wasn't there, Steve, with regards to the fact that we've got lots of different types of debts out there. So we've got the local government, central government. We've got, you know, your collections, You've got the bailiffs and so on. And so there's lots of different practices going on out there. Now, I know there's been changes in quite a number of those areas, but this, we're, like you say, and you alluded to, we're still on a journey, aren't we, of changing. But yeah.
Yeah, we absolutely are, and you know, I guess this is very much a personal bent of mine that I've been on for a number of years, but it frustrates me when we see that, for example, in the enforcement industry, we have a single overarching piece of legislation that governs that industry, and so people can expect, you know, relatively consistent treatment regardless of which firm they're dealing with. Yet on the front end collections and resolution space, where it's arguably more important, we don't have that. And like you said, local government has its own regulations, legislation that governs the way that it collects. Central yes. government, you know, HMRC will treat you very differently to DWP. So even within a sector, within yeah. the industry, it's different. Then you have the utilities, you know, so Ofgem will have different sets of rules. And then you move on and you've got the FCA regulated side of the sector. So if your first engagement is with, let's say, an FCA regulated firm and you get treated really well, that's going to give you the encouragement to go on and maybe try and resolve some of your other debts. If the next one does the BT thing, you know, and says, "Well, no," I should caveat that I'm picking up on your example, Phil, and not having a pop at BT. Apologies, BT, if you're listening. But you know, if they do that, no, well, we're just going to disconnect you, and you need to pay it in full. Then you're going to drive that engagement back underground, and engagement is the critical factor. Without that, you know, I quite often say debt is the product of a transaction that is yet to be completed.
Yeah.
And the only way you can complete that transaction is to have all parties engaged in a conversation. So why would you want to scare off the one party who can actually help you to close that transaction?
Yeah. Yeah. It does bring back sort of memories of my own experience. And I must admit, I think, you know, step change, or as it used to be, CCCS, just to have that help and support and that encouragement was just right at that time. And equally so today. And I say to people that, you know, if you are finding sort of challenges, you know, around your finances in whatever way, and you're dealing with different organisations, then really there is support out there, and you need to go to one of the free debt and money advice organisations like Step Change or Citizens Advice or National Debt Line, Pay Plan, Christians Against Poverty. All of those provide that free service, so it would be an encouragement to do it. But you're right, it's, if you're discouraged in one area, then you're going to apply that same experience across the board. And then you start to wonder, well, you know, I don't like being treated like this. It's bad enough being in this situation without actually having it compounded by the way that we're being treated. Now, I know there's been a lot said about collections, of, you know, local government and central government, the collection practices. And I agree with you, and I think many others do. There needs to be something more consistent with regards to the way things are collected. People can be reassured if they know what the process is, rather than having that confusion across the board.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to something that's very primal about what it is to be human. So we talk about the reptilian brain, the fight or flight response.
Yeah,
and this is exactly why marketing works, because the fight or flight response reacts to unfamiliarity. And so if people are unfamiliar with what's about to happen to them, they're more likely to either be bolshy and push against it, or to run away.
Yeah.
And yet when you market things right, when you have the branding in place, when people, where it's not unfamiliar to people because they've seen it time and time again, then it becomes something they're more comfortable with and more likely to engage with. And we did this with mental health. We shone a spotlight on mental health over a number of years before, you know, it's not only acceptable, it's expected that we speak about our mental health these days. I still, you know, I come from a working class background. I go down the pub on a Friday night and I drink with all the trades, and I've got guys coming in now. You know, I'm approaching 50, but I've got guys coming in who are, you know, 34, 35. And you say, so how are you doing? And they go, my mental health ain't that great this week. And could you imagine having that conversation 20 years ago?
Absolutely not.
No. It just wouldn't have been a thing, and yet today it is. And if we could do that with mental health, we could do that with debt.
Yeah. I think it's one of the things that really makes my blood boil is still this stigma there with regards to our ability to talk about our own personal finances. And the notions that people have running through their heads, you know, what will people think? How will they treat me? You know, what will my family say? And what will happen at work? And I remember I just started a job with an investment management company in their training department, and thinking to myself, I wonder how they'd respond if they knew I was actually struggling with debt and working my way through it. And so there's these fears in the background sort of lingering. But I think that more needs to be done, not just about talking about debt. It's understanding what brings a person on a journey to that point of indebtedness, and stop doing these judgments. You know, you're in debt, it's your own fault, you made bad choices. Yet sometimes there's actually mindsets and behaviours that we're unawares of that actually take us on a journey that keep bringing us back to, I seem to be bad with money, when in actual fact, that's not the truth. It's actually the beliefs that you hold that inspire or impact your choices. And unless you're aware of those things, then you're basically doomed to make the same choices and the same behaviours over and over again. And that's probably my beef with the concept of financial well-being and the way that it's been promoted. I think financial well-being is three things. It's the past, the present, and the future. And we're very good at the present, dealing with the here and now, and that has to be done. And we're very good at looking at the future, but we don't like venturing into the past because it might be a bit uncomfortable. But that's where the issue often lies that has brought us to where we're at in the present.
That's a huge statement, Phil. But I'm gonna layer over the top of it. Right, what we often see that's in front of us, you know, what you often see is the symptom of a problem, not the problem itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
The root cause inevitably lies elsewhere. And, you know, we used to talk about this in structured problem solving, where we say, you know, you go into the bathroom and there's water on the floor. Well, you have to mop it up, right?
Yeah.
So you mop that water up. But if you don't fix or turn the tap off or fix the leaking pipe, you'll be forever mopping up water off the floor.
Yeah.
So, yes, you've got to deal with the immediate concern, getting the water off the floor. But if you don't also tackle the pipe, then you're not going to change the future. It will just keep reoccurring. I think that sort of root cause analysis is something that we do very well in business, but we fail to do on ourselves.
Yeah, I do agree. And like you say, it's not to take away from the fact that there's a lot of really good work going on in terms of helping people in the here and now. You know, you are, like you say, mopping up the water. We are addressing some of the issues when people actually do put their hand up and say, can you help me? You know, we do do that. We give them sort of tools that they can use to help themselves while we support them through the process. But it's just an interesting one where it's the banner of financial well-being that underneath that sits just education. And if it was just down to education, then fine. We'd all be, well, certainly when we left school, we'd start to feel okay, because there's very little in terms of financial education in school. But the other aspect to it is the fact that behavioral scientists have discovered that 80 to 90% of the decisions we make are made emotionally. And so we need to be able to somehow tap into the 10 to 20% where we're thinking more rationally, we're dealing with the facts. And the number of people who say to me, I'm bad with money, I'm no good with numbers. And I say to them, I say, well, do you go shopping? And they say, yes. I say, so, and while you're shopping, you sort of, do you add up the cost of things? Do you divide and multiply and subtract? And they go, oh yeah, I do all those things. So the facts say that actually you are good with numbers. It's just the fact that you might not know how to use a quadratic equation. But we're left to believe a certain belief that then impedes us. And I think that's part of the, you know, you were talking earlier about the root cause. We've got beliefs that impede us.
Yeah, I do think there's something in that, insofar as, you know, it's so easy to browbeat ourselves into remaining where we are rather than moving forward. And I think the context in which the numbers are presented as well is important, because again, you know, shopping is something that's really familiar to us.
Yeah.
And yet the FCA's financial lives survey for this year, 2022, showed, I think it was like nearly 18 million people. It was 31-32% of the population, something like that, have low to poor numeracy when it comes to financial concepts, so financial products.
Yeah.
And of course, now the consumer duty is bringing in the need for you know, very clear communications in a way that people can understand. And the likes of Plain Numbers, an organization that's run by Mike Ellicock. They did some research and found 54% of people have the numeracy that you would expect of a late primary child, primary school child.
Right.
And so that child could probably absolutely go and work in that context in a supermarket. But once you start trying to put APR and you know, some really sort of weird characteristics into a financial product, that then becomes very unfamiliar to people who could, you know, otherwise work things out fairly well.
Yeah, I could never get the hang of algebra at all. So when I first started in the training industry, somebody said to me, "Oh, we love our acronyms here. So if you don't understand anything, just stop us and we'll explain." Well, the number of times I was stopping them, and I thought, nothing's really changed today, is it? You know, and no wonder then people are kind of fearful. You only have to look at pensions and tax, you know, two very, very complex areas. And it's enough to put, you know, anybody off. But when in tax, you talk to somebody and they're within the tax office, and with all due respect, there's times when I've asked questions and I don't know the answer to that. I'll have to talk to so-and-so. And I'm thinking, well, I'm struggling with this, you know. It's a difficult area. But in terms of the collections then, Steve, you were saying there's various things going on now that's placed there to help people. And you talked about the importance of engagement and maintaining that engagement. What kind of things are you sort of doing now that in the collection industry that will help somebody who really wants to engage with you?
So I think there's a number of things. So I mean, look, you could run through the end to end. I'll pick a couple out. So you touched on financial education and behavioural science earlier. There are quite a few apps that do financial education in inverted commas. And I spoke to a couple of guys the other day who work for an app called Nudge. And what Nudge does is it collects all of your sort of, you know, your cookies and bits and pieces. So it knows what you're up to on the internet. And through open banking, it knows what you're spending your money on. And it uses behavioral science to deliver you articles and news around finances in a Facebook style feed.
Oh, right.
And so it's absolutely catered for your personality type, for the things that you spend money on, how it can help you improve. Always a clear next step of where to go in your financial journey. And it doesn't matter if you're got £100,000 in hedge funds. Or if you're, you know, making minimum wage, or it tailors to you, and it's the probably the best of its kind that I've seen so far. And I'd be if any of your listeners have seen other stuff like that, I'd love to hear about it. But it's a great concept.
Yes.
There are some other really nifty bits out there at the moment. I saw a company called Initio AI. So they've got a chatbot that will fill in your I&E form for you, but it understands things. There's a thing on LinkedIn today. Someone put, I spend a pony on fags, and it goes, right, I've added £25 to cigarettes. And it's like, it understands this stuff, you know. I spent a score down the boozer, and it comes up with £20 on going out. we're getting pretty next gen on this stuff these days.
Well, we certainly are, by the sounds of it. I mean, I've not come across Nudge or this. What did you call it? Initio.
Initio AI.
Right.
Yeah, really nifty stuff. There's another one out there at the moment called Superfy Finance. And it's a repayment optimizer, so it's almost like a pre-delinquency tool, but you could use it at other parts of the journey as well. So what Superfy does is you can go on and you can put in all your credit cards,
yeah,
and tell it what your balances are, and it's got a load of pre-selected interest rates that you can pick from, and your loans and overdrafts, and you can customize them as much as you want. And then you tell it how much money you've got left at the end of the month to spend to pay off of this debt.
Yeah.
And then it gives you two options. And this is where I like it. So first option is Avalanche. Avalanche, it pays the maximum amount possible it can off of the debt with the highest interest rate, and then just makes the minimum payment on everything else.
Right.
Or you can choose Snowball. And what Snowball does is pays off the maximum it can off the account with the smallest balance first.
Right.
And then the minimum amount on everything else. So look, under Snowball, you're going to be in debt for longer, but the volume of accounts you've got will be decreasing.
Yes, yeah.
But with Avalanche, you'll get out of debt quicker, but you may have a number of accounts for longer.
Right.
So it depends what motivates you. And then yes. it's got like a small fee charging thing in there as well, where you can set it up with your details. You press one button, it makes all those payments for you.
That's incredible, Steve. Steve, that is fantastic. I've not heard of some of those things that you've just talked about. So I've learned something now, and I'm going to go away and have a look at them. So Nudge, Initio AI, and Superfy Finance.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we're hoping to publish something around all of these new and nifty things, all of these great fintechs that are popping up now in the marketplace. Yeah. We'll put something out for free on this, either at the end of this year or beginning of next year, because I think it's so important that we understand there's income maximizers are absolutely brilliant, and we all talk about income maximizers, but it feels like sometimes it's the only thing we talk about to help people out. There are loads of things we can do to help people out, and the more that we do, the more people are likely to ask for help.
Yeah, definitely. Steve, it's been absolutely fantastic. I'm mindful that time's passed us by now. I really appreciate your time. If people wanted to sort of get hold of you or certainly talk to somebody, how would they get hold of you or your organisation?
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is to tap me up on LinkedIn. That's open every day that I'm at work. Otherwise, I'm on stephen.coppard@arum.co.uk.
Right. Thank you very much, Steve. I really appreciate that. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on Wisdom Chat.
Thanks ever so much, Phil. Really enjoyed it.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye now.